Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad that you could be with us on your Independence Day here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Our own day of independence, kind of like our own Mexit rather than Brexit. Back in 1776. Glad to have you with us. I have guests here today. I'm going to talk to them in a moment. I'm doing four things at once. There's no people here in the studio today, except for myself, the guest, and Linda, who just got off the air. So glad to have you with us. We're doing everything ourselves today. And that's good, because you learn to do these things all on your own. We're going to talk about a show that's actually doubling up this summer. They did the same thing last summer at the J, the Jewish Community Center, the White Theater over in Overland Park. They're doing Mary Poppins, the favorite musical, Mary Poppins. And not only is it at the White Theater, a week after it closes, about a week at the White Theater, it's going to be at Johnson County Theater in the Park. And you can see it in either place. Here to tell us all about why that came about and all the complications, perhaps, at changing locations are the director, Tim Baer, with us again. He is the director of Mary Poppins, and he's also the producing artistic director of Johnson County Theater in the Park. Welcome back to the show once again. We're both fighting the weather and voice and all of that, but we're going to get through it.
Yes.
We're going to tell the people all about these shows. And also with us, Jason Chanley is with us. He studied lighting design and production design theory and is the Jay's facility and production coordinator. So you welcome back to the show, Jason.
Thank you.
Glad to have you back again. This is the third time that I can remember that there's been a show at the White that then went over to Theater in the Park and did a week or two over there as well. So how did that come about, and why are you putting such a big burden on yourself, your performers?
Well, it started a few years ago when we did Hairspray, and at the time this show became available, and the White Theater decided that they wanted to do it there, and we wanted to do it at Theater in the Park, and that wouldn't have been very neighborly to say, well, we're going to do it too, since it was down the road. So I suggested that perhaps we did it together and we could share the hard production costs and save a little money maybe and get a little bit bigger production for our, you know, bang for our buck, and thought, well, let's do it and see how it goes. And it went really well. It was wonderful. So we can't help ourselves now. We want to do something with lots of good production value, and we can share the cost of it. The hard production cost, of course, being the scenic costs and the props and the costumes, that kind of stuff. And it just works out really well. It's kind of interesting, and it's nice for the actors, too. Most actors don't get, in our town at least, don't get to do a show that has a run quite that long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a lot of performances, and I think the actors enjoy it. They really get to settle into the show and have a good time doing it. And as far as last year, we did Shrek last year, was a co-production, and a lot of the actors told me, I really wish we could do it longer. Of course, they might have been pulling my leg. They just didn't want to say, I'm sick of this, and move on. But I think it's really a good thing for us all.
If they're going to be a professional, they have to get used to longer runs than most community theaters have.
That's right. Unfortunately, most of them have full-time jobs. So they're doing a full-time gig on top of doing shows and stuff, too. But I think most everyone really had a good time doing it.
Now, Jason, you have to build two sets. You have to build one inside at the gym, which is a beautiful place.
Well, thank you. Yes.
I remember when I originally toured the place years back now, they were telling me, says, oh, we can fly in scenery, and I guess now you can fly in Mary Poppins.
We fly in a lot of things. Mary Poppins being one of them. The good thing about the co-production especially is that we design it to travel. So when we do the production design, we design in mind of both spaces, knowing the limitations of one space versus the other. So, like with Mary Poppins especially, what I've been coining, we have designed a Rubik's Cube meets the Sweeney Todd set meets the Barbie Dreamhouse on crack. It's a very giant thing that goes all together and rotates and opens, and there's a lot of little magic elements with it. But the good thing is that we then disassemble it stick it on a truck and truck it out to the end of the park. And it just plunks right on stage, and we just continue along. And it worked really well with Shrek last year. Literally, we just kind of had a 30-minute meeting with the cast on stage, said, hey, here's what changes as far as your blocking is concerned. And we were running the show, you know, from top to bottom the first night we were back out of the park. So from the scenic and the design aspect of it, it literally just transfers.
Which stage is actually bigger? I'm going to say in the park, but
correct.
The White is pretty big too.
We're pretty big. I mean, we can hold Broadway tours, really. We're a pretty good size. We're deceptively large, but the park is definitely larger. They've got a 60-foot proscenium opening, whereas ours is only about 38. So we do bring in the sides at during the park a little bit, just to kind of telescope it in and make it a little bit more of a narrow playing field. But otherwise, the park's the largest one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, from the aspect of the director now, you have, it's the same cast, going to be in both places.
That's right. Yeah.
And I suppose nothing really changes except some of the blocking, perhaps.
Well, no, nothing really. We do have a little bit more depth at the park. We do bring the sides of the stage in, like Jason said, so that from a width standpoint, it really truly is exactly the same show you would see, you know, at the Jewish Community Center in the White Theater. We have a little bit more depth, and because the White Theater has the great advantage of having a fly gallery above their stage, and we don't have that. You know, we have metal I-beams 16 feet above the stage, so we don't have the advantage, or we don't have the loveliness of having that extra space up there. So a couple of things might need to change just in terms of Mary flying and, you know, those kinds of things, because we just don't have the height that the Jewish Community Center does at the White. So, but from a director's standpoint, you know, I guess there is a little bit of an advantage, because we go back into tech for 4 days, you know, just get all the tech elements together and give the actors a chance to walk on a concrete stage in 100-degree weather with bugs, mm-hmm. as opposed to a lovely inside theater. But it might give me a moment to say, okay, let's revisit a couple of things. I wasn't quite happy with how this ended up, or, you know, after a long run, things might change a little bit in the show, actors, you know, put in improvements, and maybe they won't really be improvements, so we'll take those out and
for sure.
try to get back to what we did on opening night, or as close to that, you know.
When you're in the process of casting, the lady you picked to be Mary Poppins, she knew that she'd be flying through the air.
She did.
Any trepidation on her part from that?
I don't think so. She is a trooper, let me tell you. I did say at our first cast meeting, because honestly, I just assumed everybody knows Mary Poppins flies, you know, and at the first cast meeting, just joking, I said, oh, P.S., you have to fly. You don't have trouble with that, do you?
Yeah.
And she said, nope, I don't.
So maybe inside rather than outside.
Yeah. The first time that our flight director from ZFX, the company that flies, was here, and after she flew for about an hour, you know, it takes a lot of understanding how, frankly, it's interesting, geometry works, and pendulum this and that. And
why it's a big physics problem.
Yeah,
it really is.
Physics lesson, frankly. It's always interesting to listen to them talk about it. But after she got done flying, she took her harness off. She said, I feel so heavy now. Like I honestly believed I could fly.
See, now you said something I didn't know. There's a special company that assists with the flying?
Mm-hmm. There are several within the United States especially. They do any number of shows from Peter Pan to Mary Poppins, Beauty and the Beast, and all that. And really, it's kind of which one do you think is going to, much like any vendor that you're looking for. So when we knew we were doing Mary Poppins, I specifically wanted to go with ZFX, so I contacted them. They have quite a legacy of being innovative, being interesting, always wanting to try something new. We hadn't worked with them at the White Theater before. Previously, we'd had another company, Fly By Foy, which is, you know, synonymous with the industry, really, in starting the industry. ZFX does a lot of stuff internationally, Las Vegas, all that good stuff. So having seen them at various conventions as well as other theaters, mm-hmm. I was excited for a chance to bring them in and work with them.
Yeah, they probably have a good safety record, I would think. That would be important.
Safety, yeah, safety is paramount. And we do have, you know, we have a great flight crew that is very specific about our safety procedures and, you know, making sure that, especially like Bert and his flying, you know, there's a very specific way that we get him in his harness and run him through his safety procedures and his checks. So it's always nice to see people adhere to that and take it so seriously.
Yeah, so if people know that things are safe.
Things are safe.
Things are safe.
And try to keep it safe.
That's right. Try our best. We're speaking with Tim Baer, the director and producing artistic director of Theater in the Park, and Jason Chanley, who is the Jays. I'm trying to get into the habit of saying Jays. I got into the habit, and first I always said Jewish Community Center, and then I got into the habit of saying White Theater, and I have to say the Jays.
We have rebranded ourselves. We are an ever-evolving and growing organization.
He is the facility and production coordinator for the Jay, which is in Overland Park. They are both hosting the show Mary Poppins this summer. If you've just joined us, the indoor version, if you prefer your musicals indoor, runs at the Jay from Saturday the 9th through Sunday the 24th, days off in between, of course. And then they move after about 5 days off. That's not very much.
No,
it's not 5 days off, unfortunately.
It runs at Theater in the Park for 2 weekends then. The 29th of July, the 30th, 31st, then August the 3rd through Saturday the 6th at Theater in the Park. Now, the White Theater, if you have not been there, it's a lovely place, by the way, great facility, 5801 West 115th Street, essentially the intersection of 117th of Null in Overland Park. If you MapQuest things, the zip code is 66211. The number at the J is 913-327-8054. So if you prefer your musicals inside, you want to prepare for that. If you like it outside with the heat and the bugs.
And the picnic and the fried chicken.
Tim said it. I'm just repeating what Tim said.
That's right.
That's at 79th and Renner inside Shawnee Mission Park. So the best way to get there would be, where would you get off 435?
435 in Midland is a really
Midland.
Great exit right there.
Yeah, it's in Shawnee Mission Park, and it's a lovely facility as well. It has really grown and changed over the years.
Yeah,
I remember back in the early 90s that there was a big concrete slab, a room for the actors to change in, up the hill, and everybody else was on blankets or folding chairs.
That's right.
Out on that hill. But to look at it now, it looks a lot like Starlight did back in the late 50s, early 60s.
Right, in the beginning, sure.
It really does. It's both great facilities, and they're, of course, hosting the show Mary Poppins. I guess, is it still considered a children's show?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's a family show. It's definitely a family show. The big thing about it, though, is that it's not the Disney movie.
No.
It has a lot of the Sherman songs in it. You know, Jolly Holiday, Step in Time, things of that nature, but it takes more of the tactic of the books and the lessons of the books and what happened in the books versus, you know, the movie. And that's, like, one of the questions I always get, and they're always like, oh, I love the penguins. How are you doing the dancing penguins? And then, and then I'm like, oh, funny story. There are no penguins. And then you just see the life drain out of the poor person. I'm like, oh, but we have all these other things. So.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And it was a series of books, as you said.
Yeah, P.L. Travers did the series of books. And there's actually, I believe, another one coming out here soon.
Oh, really?
Like an updated something or other, I believe. And then there's also the new movie coming out that Disney is going to revamp and do as a sequel.
It's been a while since they did the other version. It was Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke. Yeah.
And Dick Van Dyke. Yeah. Well, it's about time to redo it. Not that they didn't do a wonderful job.
Yeah.
They did. How long has the stage version been going on?
Just under 10 years, really. Mm-hmm. Cameron McIntosh, the famed man who merchandised Broadway in a lot of ways, put this one together. And after a wonderful and successful run in, you know, England, London, and all that good stuff, they brought it over here onto Broadway. And it did a great run, you know, here, and it's also doing an international tour as well as a domestic tour as well. So it's been doing quite well from that standpoint.
So if any parents want to know a brief synopsis. Anyone who may not be familiar, I would think most were, but I'm often surprised.
Yeah.
The storyline.
You can go, actually, you can go on our website, Theater in the Park, and we have the entire story there. If you just click on Mary Poppins, you'll see her there on our homepage. Our complete synopsis of the show is there. But it's really, truly appropriate for everybody and your family. And at the White Theater, they're doing lots of really cool little special events, too. You can meet Mary Poppins after the show. You can come and see, have a tour of backstage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think there's even, you can come and have tea and
Mary Poppins will teach you how to have tea.
Yeah, so much. It's very family.
No, a family hired her as a governess,
a nanny,
a nanny.
Well, I'm not so sure that they really hired her. I think she decided they needed them, and she showed up basically. So she takes care of them.
Lots of wonderful songs. People may not connect all the songs to the shows. I noticed that happens a lot.
Yeah,
did they know the song? They don't always know the movie or the play that it came from.
Right.
But some of the songs in the show.
Well, as you mentioned, Spoonful of Sugar, of course, which is very popular. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Yeah, that's what started that word. Yes.
That's right. Jolly Holiday, which is a very sweet song that you'd recognize from the movie, especially with that's particularly in the movie where Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke dance with penguins, but we have lots of dancers on stage, so it's just as sweet. Feed the Birds is a very well-known song I think that everyone would recognize. And there's some other new ones now that the Sherman Brothers contributed to and some other folks too, but they're all just right in the vein of the whole Mary Poppins family.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of the performers. You earlier mentioned the lady who plays Mary Poppins. I guess she is involved with her son, you told me earlier?
That's correct. Jennifer Renfro plays Mary Poppins, and her son, Ben, plays Michael Banks in the show. And they're absolutely delightful. He's delightful. She's delightful. And talk about a commitment. They live in Warrensburg, so they've been coming in for rehearsals every day, driving from Warrensburg, too, and she's wonderfully talented. She actually owns a studio there, a performing arts studio, basically, from dance and voice and musicians, lots and lots of stuff there. So she's our furthest away cast member, for sure, but I think we have a lot of names that you will have seen around Kansas City and the cast as well. Lots and lots of really talented folks.
Now, the actors knew what they were getting into, I would imagine. A longer extended show, two different locations. Do you think, increase your turnout?
From the White Theater perspective, we go from the audition process of Theater in the Park. So from our perspective, it really does open a door to a great deal more people than we would normally get. Just because more people are coming out to audition for more shows. So with the Theater in the Park, you're auditioning for five shows versus us as the White Theater just casting as one. You know, everyone just come to this, do this one show. Additionally, too, it helps in a lot of ways because people understand and have seen the shows and they know what to expect and they want the opportunity to perform longer. Two different spaces. It's really kind of fun. And the team that we have, the dynamic that we have, we had one person who's like, I really want to work with you guys. I really want to work with you. But the schedule didn't work out. So we have that aspect that's fun to work with too, that we built with the relationship between the two theaters. So it's a great thing actually in a lot of ways to have people come out for the co-production versus just one production on either of our ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There probably will be some differences between doing it inside and out. There's probably can't be avoided that there'll be some things.
Oh, yeah. Dive bomb bugs, June bugs and moths the size of your head.
And the lovely family of raccoons that likes to spend the night around the park, too.
Those raccoons can be very destructive.
Sometimes they get impatient and come before the last curtain call, and start looking through things. Last year, somebody left the dressing room open and somebody had snacks on their counter and they got back and there were four babies and a mother eating their snacks on the dressing table. So, there are certain rules.
This isn't a problem at the White. It's all inside.
Raccoons being, mischievous little things. We don't have those yet at the White.
Now, you can see more people at the J. I've noticed that you have your basic audience, but you, they also can go further back behind the curtain and go higher if you need to.
Well, we, for our straight plays, which are, you know, a little bit more intimate and whatnot, we do cordon off the house. So we have a mid-house curtain that we can bring down our house count and make it a little bit more intimate. And that's about 270. But for the big shows, the big musicals, we seat 500. So we're, you know, we're pretty much in line with a lot of the, you know, theaters around town as well as far as our capacity. And there's not really a bad seat in the house at all.
No.
I mean, I prefer to sit way back in the back when I watch shows anyway, just because I want the full view. I don't, sitting up front in the front row, which is like what people clamor over, I've never understood, because I feel like the person's performing in my lap, which, you know, is you don't get the full view.
And you're looking for different things than your average theater goer is looking
for. That's very true. That's very true. I do look at it all very differently than the average theater goer. But
you probably look at it from as much a technical point of view than an artistic point of view. Probably both.
And that's why I do like to sit further back. So I always say, no, seriously, you'll love it back here. It's great. You get the full picture. You can see the full thing. It's really pretty. And then inevitably they're like, oh, you're so right. And then I say, yes, yes, I was.
What was the hardest thing about designing the set? That it had to move, that it looked authentic, that it looked period.
Massive. It's the basic of the set is a 16 foot by 16 foot by 16 foot cube. It is 4,000 some odd cubic feet. It is massive. It rotates, it opens. From an engineering standpoint has been, I guess, the bigger detail, because it's all steel infrastructure. It's steel tubing. It's a big, massive steel tube. And just all the things the script required it to do. You know, in the kitchen, these particular things happen. In the nursery, these particular things happen. And so it's just redesigning around that. And so Tim just came and said, hey, and we started the process in November. And he said, hey, here's what I want it to do. And I, you know, looked at him and I said, no, really. And then he said, no, this is what I want to do. And then,
well, that's a pipe dream.
And I was like, oh, aren't you just the cutest thing? And then, you know, I went back to my office and spent a good week putting together a white model to try and figure out. And then I sent him a video, you know, of, okay, this is how it could work and all this stuff. And then went the drafting phase. So it's just been, since November, it's been a long process.
Well, people don't realize all that goes into something like that. You do, of course.
It's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not difficult. It's a challenge, but it's a happy challenge, I think, because, like I said before, the Jewish Community Center there in the White Theater, they have the ability to fly scenery off of the stage. And had we just been producing it on the White Theater stage and it didn't have to go someplace else, we probably would have made some different kinds of choices about scenery flying in and things like that. But we just don't have that option at the park. So it adds that element of, okay, this has to work in both places. How can we accomplish this and make it work and make it be the same show? So that's a challenge, but it's actually a kind of exciting and fun challenge, you know, to figure out how does that giant Jenga puzzle go together.
Oh, sure.
Without falling over.
Yeah. I guess your other big challenge would be artistically, of course, casting is always important, the accents. English accents, Cockney accents.
Yes, and everybody's doing really well. I think one good thing maybe that kind of gave people a leg up is that, you know, the cast albums from the London production and the Australian production exist. So as they're listening to the music and they can hear someone saying the words. And I actually found out the other day that one of our cast members is a vocal coach, a dialect coach.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's like, oh, hello.
I'm like, well, hello. Drag somebody out in the hall and help them a little bit. So, but everybody's doing a wonderful job. Are we strictly, purely English and Cockney? Probably not, but enough that Kansas audiences will believe it, I think.
Yeah,
they're doing a marvelous job.
And have fun with it. And of course, costumes would also be a consideration.
Julia Rass is the costume designer for the show, and she's done, I've had the great good fortune of working with her before, and she costumed Shrek, and I believe she's the house costume designer.
She's my resident costume designer. And she's beautiful. I mean, some of the girls came out in their Jolly Holiday outfits, which Julia has very inventively made reversible so that a costume change is much easier. And so they just came out, and they were beautiful and gorgeous. And the detail and the work that she does and the concepts that she comes up with, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. She's wonderfully creative, and she's a brilliant technician and completely open to collaboration, mm-hmm. which is really lovely, you know, to have a director walk in and say, I'd like it to be this and this and this, and you know how we are. We want the world, or we want, you know. But she's wonderful to work with because she listens to that, and then she inserts her creativity and her ability to look at things from a unique perspective, and everything ends up working beautifully. And honestly, many times I've looked at stuff when she showed it to me and said, that's exactly what I meant, although that's not what I thought I meant.
Oh,
you know, it's wonderful. So, yeah, she's great.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's do the particulars again for me. Show opens Saturday, July 9th. It's coming up. Saturday night.
Oh, like a
barrel. Day. We'll run the 9th in the evening, then Sunday the 10th. An afternoon matinee. Shows pick up again Thursday the 14th. They skip Friday, of course. It's the Jewish Sabbath. So Thursday night at 7:30 on the 14th. Thursday night the 14th at 7:30. Then Saturday evening the 16th at 7:30. Another matinee on Sunday the 17th at 2 o'clock p.m. Evening shows, 7:30. Matinees, 2 o'clock. That's at the J. Then Thursday the 21st. Saturday the 23rd, Sunday the 24th at 2 o'clock p.m., but they won't be done then. They'll be done if they run at the J then. Then I guess at some point you'll, as you put it earlier, lock, stock, and barrel.
Basically.
Moved everything over to Theater in the Park.
That very night. Actually.
That very night.
Wow. That very night. And it runs at Theater in the Park. It'll open Friday evening, the 29th. And I believe all of them are 8:30 evening performances.
That's correct.
Yeah. So Friday the 29th. Saturday the 30th and Sunday the 31st at 8:30. No afternoon matinees.
No. A little too light.
A little too light for all the folks. Picks up again on Wednesday, August the 3rd, Thursday the 4th, Friday the 5th, and concludes on Saturday the 6th at Theater in the Park. The White Theater, where the first part of the run is, the J, I have to get into the habit of saying that.
So do I.
5801 West 115th Street, essentially 117th and Knoll. You can see the parking garages for the Sprint campus from the J parking lot, or the community center's parking lot. It's in Overland Park. If you map Quest Things, the zip code is 66211, and the number at the J is 913-327-8054, or you can go online to jkc.org. Show then moves to Theater in the Park, 79th and Renner, essentially, just inside Shawnee Mission Park, where they will have the rest of the run. And so two locations, if you prefer your musicals inside, if you prefer your musicals outside, I bet a lot of people will want to see it, both versions.
I was going to say, I think I prefer that you prefer inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
See it first at the J, and then you won't want to miss it again, so you can bring a picnic and see it at the Theater in the Park.
And that's the best part about the park version, is that you can have a picnic.
Yeah.
You can go early, have a picnic, sprawl out, you know, fried chicken and mashed potatoes. And,
I want to come when you bring dinner.
I know, right? Well, I'm there a lot lately this year, so.
Mary Poppins will pop into your heart at both locations, beginning first this coming weekend. Thanks so much for being with us. Kim Baer is with us. He is the director of the show and the producing artistic director at Theater in the Park. And Jason Chandley is with us as well. He is the facility and production coordinator. Big job on this show.
Oh, yes.
For the J, but doing the same work at both locations. Thanks so much for being with us. Enjoy the rest of your Independence Day holiday.
Thank you for having us.
Have a hot dog for me.
Happy 4th.
Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we have more interesting holiday events to talk about. The Summerfest concert series. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, the community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Hope you're enjoying your Independence Day activities. a lot of activities going on. It's probably a good thing that it rained in the last few days that made the ground a little bit damp, less chance of fire going on. But we know a lot of you are going to do that. A lot did last night for tonight as well, and probably for the next few nights as well. As we celebrate our the independence of our nation, our own Amexit rather than Brexit. Happened in 1776, many, many years ago. What we're going to talk about now is the Summerfest concert series, which will be happening throughout the month of July in two different locations. They'll explain that to you. A professional chamber music ensemble. And Summerfest will be going on. This year's theme, A Tribute to American Roots. With us to tell us all about it, Alex East, a member of the Artistic Committee, artistic advisor, and a musician. You actually play with the...
Yes, I do. I'm a cellist.
And a cellist, yeah. Very challenging, I would say.
Well, yeah, mostly.
Don Dagenet is with us as well. He is the board chair and president as well. And they're here to tell us about the series of concerts that will kind of knit together, I guess one each weekend in the month of July, as well as something to do with the Fringe Festival, I see, as well. And that entails the Summerfest concert series. The theme this year, Don, American Roots.
It is indeed, and this is the 26th year that Summerfest has been in existence. If you're a fan of classical music in Kansas City, why, Summerfest pretty much has a monopoly on July. Mm-hmm. There's not much else going on in July in terms of classical music, and so we're the refuge for people who need a fix for classical music during that month. But also, Summerfest does not only traditional works, you know, like Beethoven and Mozart and Haydn and Handel and that sort of thing, but also some kind of new and adventurous repertory as well that's mixed in. So it's rather eclectic, and Alex is going to talk more about that when he talks about the music. But I just wanted to briefly introduce you all to Summerfest by saying that Summerfest performs for the four weekends of July, and so it performs on Saturday evenings and on Sunday afternoons. The Saturday evening concerts are at 7:30, and they're always given at the White Recital Hall, which is in the Performing Arts Center at UMKC, 4949 Cherry. Many of you are familiar with that venue, so that's Saturday evenings. Then the Sunday afternoon concerts, this year we're returning to our roots, and we're giving those at St. Mary's Episcopal Church, which is at 13th and Holmes. People who are familiar for Summerfest, who've been around for a long time, remember that for years and years, Summerfest gave their Sunday afternoon concerts at St. Mary's, and that really is where the group was born. But then in recent years, for various reasons, they had to move to a different venue, which was fine, but St. Mary's has recently been renovated. It retains its charm. It's a wonderful old church with a wonderful acoustics, but the chairs are much more comfortable, and the floor is new and not squeaky, and all sorts of issues we used to have been resolved, and they've graciously invited us to come back down and perform. So we're going to be at St. Mary's again on Sunday afternoons. So it's four Saturdays in a row and four Sundays in a row, the same program given Saturday and Sunday each weekend.
Yeah, and does St. Mary's have a reputation of perhaps being haunted?
Well, not on Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, it seems to me someone did a show there a few years back, and
you're exactly right.
It emphasized
right, exactly. Yeah. We don't promise any ghosts to be part of the performances.
No, haunted by one of the former vicars.
I think that's right. That's
yeah, I think so. Right. Yeah, well, just a little element. Of
you ever seen him down there, Alex?
Not personally.
Well, let's talk about each of the concerts, one each weekend, and again, I'll repeat, the Saturday concerts are at White Recital Hall on the campus of UMKC, 4949 Cherry, excuse me, right next door to the new rep building down there.
Right.
And the Sunday concerts at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Talk about the season. How did you break that down?
Well, the artistic advisors sit down every year and sort of talk about a theme, the sort of a thread that we can bring through all four different programs that we perform. And we like to do an eclectic amount of repertoire, but we, specifically this year, Jane came up with the idea of American Roots, which gave us the opportunity to explore some American music, some recently composed music, and music that had its origins in popular American music. So we have some jazz-inspired, some sort of folk ballad-inspired classical compositions in each of the programs.
Yeah, African-American in origin?
Some, yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's some jazz composition. There's on the first week, our thematic piece is called The Roots 2 Piano Trio, written by David Baker, and he was he just actually passed away this year. He was for many years the head of the Jazz Studies Department at Indiana University, where I went to school. And he wrote this piece for the Beaux-Arts Trio back in 1992. But the original piece that he revised was inspired by the Roots miniseries from the 70s. And it has a boogie-woogie movement, and it's just got a lot of sort of influences like that throughout the piece. It's a really interesting, eclectic piece and popular, very popular piece.
Yeah, so... Excuse me, I'm still fighting my allergies. Weekend 2, July 16th and 17th, Roots music involving, the note I made was Appalachian-type folk music.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that sprinkled throughout the season. We've got, the second week, we've got Dan Visconti's Lawless Airs, which is kind of almost like a cowboy feel to the piece. It's a harp and violin, believe it or not, but he uses the harp almost like a guitar. And then the third week, we actually have a piece. That's the week that actually corresponds with the Fringe Festival, which is something we might want to talk about a little bit. Because we're doing a little experiment, and we're taking part of our program and created a second program to do on the Friday night as part of the Fringe Festival. So people that are wandering around doing various Fringe events can hear about half our program with a little augmentation. And it has a theme of animal antics, which is its own theme. But... we've also got some of those pieces also correspond to our American Roots theme. So we have a piece called Love Dogs that we're doing that is kind of a fun piece. It's got a lot of American bluegrass influence, and it's about a six-minute piece. It's for string trio, but it's not really a powdered wig piece, let's put it that way. There's some blues and some bluegrass, and then the final section is entitled Heavy Funk. So it's kind of fun. It's fun for us to break out of the... Handel and Beethoven that we do on some of the other programs.
Sure, Animal Antics, from the notes I made, also features our friend Robert Gibby Brand.
Yes, he's going to be doing the Walrus and the Carpenter by David Alper. So he'll be narrating that piece. It includes a flute, viola, piano, and he'll be narrating along with it. It'll be, should be a lot of fun.
And he's reading a poem by Lewis Carroll, basically.
It's
a piece written based upon a Lewis Carroll poem.
And
Robert Gibby Brand's a great friend of ours, and he's a great music fan as well.
Robert, he knows all about Lewis Carroll.
He will give us a very
I've interviewed him before. He knows these people.
Yeah.
He knows his background.
Yeah.
He's a great researcher.
It should be a lot of fun.
And so that'll be given, by the way, on Friday night before the Saturday and Sunday performances at the Fringe Festival, twice, 6:30 and 8:30, again at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. So you get tickets for that solely through the Fringe. So if somebody wants to just try out Summerfest on a cheap opportunity, why, that's a great way to do it.
So it'll essentially be an abbreviated version of the same program
doing. Yeah, we're going to do the Love Dogs, the Evan Chambers piece. And then there's a piece, an early Baroque piece by a violinist named Heinrich Ignaz Franz von Bieber. And it's called the Sonata Representativa, and Mary Grant will be playing that. And there are different animal sounds involved in this piece. You have a nightingale, a cuckoo, a frog, a hen, a rooster, a quail, and a cat.
And she's a clarinetist.
Mary Grant.
It's a violin.
So it's a Baroque piece, but it's got some crazy stuff in it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The songs of the evening, a gentle close, as you described it. How gentle are we going to go?
Well, there's a lot of songs. There's sort of Appalachian ballads in this program. There's a piece by Robert Beezer for flute and guitar. There's also a guitar guest for us who's going to be playing some Vivaldi with us. But they take a lot of, there's Barbara Allen, some of these like folk tunes. And then the final piece is by John Harbison. It's called Songs America's Love to Sing. And we played this piece several years ago, and we decided to revisit it because it takes a lot of classic songs and orchestrates them in a contemporary style with various instruments. There's things like Amazing Grace, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, St. Louis Blues, We Shall Overcome, those kinds of things, and, mm-hmm. and sets them in a contemporary chamber music setting. So, but you can pick those out of the texture, and it's pretty creative how he's put those
together. Is it fun for you to play music usually thought of as other genres in chamber style?
We play a lot of different kinds of music. I mean, classical music isn't quite the stuffy thing that people think it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. The origins are always from music that people know, especially the most successful music, I think. So we play a lot of different genres during the year. I play in the symphony, and we do pops concerts and those kinds of things. But it's nice to get the, like in the David Baker Trio we're doing the first week, you know, if we do that kind of jazz-inspired stuff, we're often playing doing backup. But that gives the riffs to the violin and the cello that are these virtuosic stuff that we don't normally get to do. So it's a special challenge, but it's also really a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet it is for you. You're used to playing the classics, probably.
Oh, yeah. We do that, too. Yeah, of course. We're doing plenty of that, actually, on Summerfest. There's something for everyone in the Summerfest programs. We really try to keep it broad.
I bet so. The number to call for more information, it looks like it's the Central Ticket Office number, correct? 816-235-6222, or online at summerfestkc.org. They can also purchase online. Sure. If they wanted. We're speaking with Alex East, a member of the Artistic Committee, Artistic Advisor, and one of the musicians as well. We're going to talk to him about some of that aspect of it. And Don Dagenet, he is with us. He is the board chairman and president. How long have you been involved?
I've only been president this year, but I've been involved in classical music for years and years and been attending Summerfest almost since the beginning.
As a fan? Or do you play an instrument?
As a fan. Yeah. No, you would not want to hear me play an instrument.
Oh, why not? You never know. And Alex, of course, you said earlier what you played.
I'm a cellist.
A cellist. Challenge of playing. the cello. You learned at an early age, I'm going to assume?
Relatively early, later than some people. But yeah, I came to Kansas City about 20 years ago to play with the symphony, and Summerfest is a nice chance for those of us in our off season to get mm-hmm. to do a little something a little different, something smaller, a little more intimate. It's really nice to go back to St. Mary's now that we're in Helsburg Hall all the time. It's a big modern facility to go someplace smaller and more intimate and kind of wrap the chairs around the audience, and it's, you know, dark and old in there, and the groups are smaller, and it's a nice chance for us to sort of do our own thing in the off season.
So. Yeah, Helsburg Hall, acoustically, it's
very special.
Yeah, very special.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a big hall. I mean, it's an orchestral hall. Mm-hmm. The chamber music sounds great in there, but it's nice to do something a little different in the summer.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to the theme, why it was picked, and especially some of the numbers that were involved.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jane came up with this idea, and then we were like, well, you know, the first thing I thought was that David Baker piece didn't really fit with theme. So we'd had that on our wish list for a while. We have a lot of pieces, standard pieces that we'd like to do that are traditional. And then we've had pieces that we've sort of discovered over time and, you know, go, maybe someday we can plug that in. And over the many years, you know, you eventually get a chance to do things and maybe do them again. If you're lucky.
It just sounds so challenging. You're doing a different concert every weekend.
That's right.
And you only have 5 days in between.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we just finished the symphony season and had a week to get ready, and then three different programs to get ready for me, and then we have a fourth program that I'm not on. But we Monday and Tuesday practice, and then Wednesday we're in rehearsals. Friday, Saturday, Sunday performances. Well, that 1 week we're doing Friday for the fringe. But just a few days, and got to keep it organized and plan all the rehearsals and put things together.
Now tell us about Summerfest from the aspect of your point of view. Do you raise money?
Well, yes, we have to. I mean, like all art organizations, you know, we never are able to charge enough for tickets to pay for the cost. But we've been very, very fortunate to have been supported over the years by lots of Kansas City's wonderful foundations, and in addition to lots of individual donors. But the Kauffman Foundation has been great to us over the years, and the Kemper Foundation and Stern and many others as well. So we're very fortunate to have that. And they recognize, I think, the importance of having a classical music outlet of some kind during the summer for Kansas City. You know, all great cities have some summertime. Mm-hmm. opportunity for classical fans to get their fix, and Summerfest is what that is in Kansas City. So we've enjoyed a lot of broad support. But you know, the organization was founded on a lark, you know, 26 years ago, and here it is, 26 years later, still performing. And I think that really says something for the fact that it fills a niche in Kansas City. And I've, you know, back in the days when I was not a board member or anything, I was just a classical music fan, enjoyed going to Summerfest concerts just to have a great opportunity to hear some great music and some sort of eclectic mixes of different kinds of repertoire during July. Mm-hmm. And then later on became more involved in the organization, was invited on the board, and now serve as president. So we're just trying to continue that great tradition.
I'm glad that organizations like yours are able to keep this up. I mean, yes. It was such a sad time for a lot of people when KXTR was lost.
Exactly.
You know, it was such a disappointment to a lot of people.
Right.
The town's only classical station to go by the wind, you know. At first it went from FM to AM, and that was not a great trade.
Yeah.
And now it's not even there at all.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that the musical collection went over to the University of Kansas.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah.
But, you know, with a big loss like that, you know, you would think that there would be a loss of interest, but apparently not.
Well, we have to keep these things alive. But, yes, there's enough interest to keep it alive, which is great. And so we're very grateful for that. I want to point out also one other thing. A lot of people are kind of out of town from here and now, during the summertime. One nice thing about Summerfest is if you buy a season ticket that includes all four concerts, you can actually use the ticket any time you want to.
Oh.
So if you miss a weekend, just bring a friend to another weekend. And so if you get the four tickets, you can use them in any way you want to. Some people just get three friends and go to one weekend concert.
I see.
Although, of course, you miss the other three if you do that.
Well,
but the point is, it's a flex tick, so you can use it just however you want to.
Seats are unassigned, so you can
right.
Just, yeah. Yeah.
Does that also involve the location?
Yes, you can use it any concert, either place. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. We just want you to come.
Let's go over the concerts again. Week 1, July 9th and 10th. And now the 9th would be at the Bright White Recital Hall.
Right.
On the campus of UMKC, 4949 Cherry. And the other concert, the next afternoon at 3 o'clock p.m. I don't think I mentioned that earlier. At St. Mary's Episcopal Church downtown.
Yeah.
13th and Holmes.
Yeah. Easy parking on Sundays.
Downtown. Yeah. So the Saturday performances are always at 7:30 at White Recital. The Sunday afternoon performances are always at 3 o'clock p.m. at St. Mary's.
Exactly. Right.
And it's part of the concert series because it's four concerts and, of course, the Fringe Festival piece. How excited were you to be part of the Fringe? I guess initially you thought, the Fringe? That's a little unusual.
Well, it was kind of our idea. You know, we approached them because every classical music organization is looking for ways to expand audiences and reach new people and so forth. We thought, you know, what better way? The Fringe is going on at the same time we're performing anyway. So, I had lunch with Cheryl Kimmies, the head of the Fringe. And she said, you know, the funny thing is the Fringe was talking about how to expand its musical offering.
Oh, really?
I'm doing just enough kind of crazy stuff that it kind of fits in, and I think it'll be fun. I think I hope the audience really enjoys it. I'm pretty sure they will.
Oh, I'm sure they will too. Yeah, something.
And it's a great program for kids as well. I mean, not that adults won't enjoy it thoroughly.
And another option.
Sure.
You know,
exactly.
The more options
exactly.
you can put out
yeah.
there,
yeah.
the more.
And you
more
can see the ad and go something else the same night. As you know, the wonderful thing about Fringe is you can go to two or three things in one night. So.
People say chamber music is actually pretty much a Fringe activity anyway. So
do they say that?
Yeah.
Now
we know it is.
No, chamber is just a smaller group of musicians, correct?
Yeah. It's not classical chamber music. It's
usually involving how many pieces?
Oh, it could be anyone from 2 to 9, 10, 12. I mean, you know, people say that larger groups are actually really big chamber groups. So it's really just it's a terminology.
Now, just to give them a comparison, the symphony usually plays with how many pieces?
Oh, 80 people.
80 people.
At least 80 to 100, maybe.
Big difference there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Week 1, African-American music. Week 2, roots music. Appalachian folk music, and you were talking a little bit about that earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that a challenge to play? It's a different style.
No, they're all folk tunes, so you know we all know these. So it's a matter of how they're woven together in the texture, because the composers take them and put them in another context. So working that out is maybe the trick.
We create musical borderlands, the 23rd and 24th, styles and ideas. You want to expand on what you said earlier?
Oh, just it's all how they put this stuff together. There's bits and pieces of lots of different styles included in each of these pieces. So
So, yeah.
The 30th and the 31st, a gentle close.
Yeah.
When I think of chamber music anyway, I think of gentle,
yeah, we
soft.
To, yeah, it's... We might think of it that way, but there's some wild stuff on there. I wouldn't say that heavy funk is, you know, close. You know, you think of three uptight string players playing a string trio. You don't think of heavy funk, but yeah, this piece kind of has that, so it's fun.
Proving once again that a well-trained musician can play any style of music.
Yeah, you gotta work on it.
Sometimes that violin is called a fiddle.
Yeah, and there's fiddle tunes in this all over this season. So
that's true, and again. The two different locations, the Saturday concerts at White Recital Hall on the campus of UNKC, always an evening concert, 7:30 p.m. The next afternoon, the Sunday concerts, always at St. Mary's Episcopal Church downtown, 3 o'clock p.m. St. Mary's at 1307 Holmes. And, of course, that special fringe performance on the 22nd, Animal Antics, with actual animal sounds. No actual animals.
No actual animals involved. Just animal sounds performed on a violin, believe it or not.
With narration by Robert Gibby Brand. Now, will he also be doing the...
Yes, he'll be at the Saturday and Sunday concerts as well for that third weekend.
Yeah,
he's right.
He's good at those narrations.
Oh, he's wonderful. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he performed with us last year and was a big hit. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you have other events during the year to kind of promote.
No, Summerfest really, really. I mean, personally, of course, you know, lots of things, but the Summerfest really focuses on those four concerts during the summertime. So, now Summerfest does do some educational programs throughout the year.
Yes,
maybe we ought to mention that.
Yes.
Yeah, before school groups and things like that. And there are several of those done usually in the spring, aren't they, Alex?
Usually, yeah, spring or fall. We sort of and we're planning all year long for the summer. So, you know, most of the musicians are locally based. That's something we really mentioned. Most of us live here. Most of the musicians actually play in the Kansas City Symphony. We also, Jane teaches at the conservatory.
We're talking about Jane Carl, who's a clarinetist, and she's been involved for a long time. She is with the UMP Conservatory of Music.
When I was in grade school, they took us to, they call it the Philharmonic then.
Yeah.
But we went several times a year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty busy during the year with our performing, but we do all get together and plan the season and get the personnel together and do all that behind the scenes.
Oh, I'll always remember the first time I heard Grand Canyon Suite. The teacher explained to us, he said, as you're sitting there, close your eyes and imagine that you're rafting down the Colorado River. And by gosh, you could.
You really could. Yeah, that's a wonderful piece.
Yeah,
right. It really is.
Play that one a lot, for sure.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being with us and enlightening us on the Summerfest concert series. It starts this coming weekend, July 9th and 10th, with African-American music, and continues then for the next 3 weeks, as well as a special fringe performance going on. Concerts at White Recital Hall and at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. The website to go to is summerfestkc.org, and the number to call is the Central Ticket Office, 816-235-6222. It is a professional chamber music ensemble, and Summerfest will be going on for 4 weekends, so 8 chances, actually 9, to see the chamber music going on in July. A nice gentle, relaxing air to the summer.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't. Well, I guess the temperature doesn't matter because you're inside in both places.
Yeah. Hopefully air conditioning will keep us all cool.
When you play outside, does the temperature affect the sound?
Oh, yes.
It does.
Yeah, this time of year is really horrible to be outside with instruments.
Fortunately, they're going to be inside. Thanks so much for being with us. Alex East, a member of the Artistic Committee and the Artistic Advisor. He's also the chair. The president, as you were, Alex, and Don DeGeney, board chair. Okay, I messed that up. Good. Alex East, a member of the artistic committee, artistic advisor, and musician for the festival. And Don DeGeney, board chairman and president.
And not a musician.
And not a musician. Never give up hope. Never give up hope of the Summerfest concert series. SummerfestKC.org and the number to call, 816-235-6222. Thanks so much for being with us and enlightening us on the Summerfest music series. Best of success to you. The Jazz Insider isn't here, but Dr. Mike will be here to sit in for him, a chamber music fan in his own right. But he's going to be playing jazz this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you.